for the crime. Tehran and Moscow tell a UN Security Council session that Western allegations about Russia using Iranian drones against Ukraine are totally untrue. And Lebanon's President Bashar al-Assad says a maritime demarcation deal with the Israeli regime won't change his country's policy, which remains in a state of war with the regime.
Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us.
A terrorist attack on a holy shrine in the Iranian city of Shiraz in Fars province leaves over a dozen people dead. Officials have confirmed 15 deaths, which include women and children. Over two dozen others have been injured in the attack that happened at the Shah Cheragh Shrine, which is one of the popular pilgrimage sites in Iran. The Daesh terrorist group has claimed responsibility. The gunman shot his way into the shrine through one of the entrances. He then proceeded to the main compound, where he opened fire on pilgrims and staff. Officials say the 30-year-old assailant has been wounded and is now in police custody. 3 days of public mourning have been announced in Fars province. Meanwhile, Iran's leader has issued a message about the terrorist attack on the holy Shah Cheragh Shrine, pledging that those responsible will undoubtedly receive punishment for what they have done. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said strong action must be taken to identify and to tackle the root causes of such heinous crimes. The leader said all people and entities in the country are responsible in the face of seditious acts by the enemy and their traitorous or ignorant stooges. He advised everyone to stay united against those undermining the people's security and disrespecting their sanctities. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi says that recent riots in the country has paved the way for the terrorist attack in Shiraz.
These riots paved the way for terrorist attacks. They came to Shah Cheragh Mausoleum and sprayed with bullets innocent people who were worshipping God. The ground for such terrorist attacks was prepared by riots.
Raisi also said the riots have their roots in the fact that Iran's adversaries have failed to disrupt its progress through other means. He said the enemies don't want Iran to develop and prosper. Earlier, Raisi vowed a severe response over the killing of civilians. Separately, Iran's envoy to the UN, Saeed Iravani, called on the Security Council to condemn the terrorist attack. He said it was a, quote, terrible terrorist attack on citizens, including women and children. Iravani said terrorism is a major threat to international peace and security. Activist and political analyst Sarbaz Ruhollah Rezvi says a hybrid war has been waged against Iran with the aim of destabilizing the country and its security.
Look at the events step by step, what took place in Iran. It started all with spreading fake news about the Mahsa Amini beaten to death. Then later on, it continued with street riots. And later on, it continued with normalization of the violence in the street. Different media took a great role, U.S.-backed media, United States of America's medias, Saudi-backed medias. They openly dragged the people and pushed the people towards violence. The Persian, medias in Western countries, they invited openly people to violence without any restriction. Then apparently what we observed were attacks on different Iranian security forces that also took place. Later on, what we observed was the activation of the separatist groups inside Iran, take it from Sistan Balochistan province to Kurdistan province, also to some other parts of Iran. And why not a terrorist attack? If you look at it from that perspective, you will find out that as I said at the very beginning of my points, a hybrid war is going on against Iran. Different, strategies of war against Iran is now being implemented. And one important conclusion that I can get is that the command center for this hybrid war is the same. The one who is bringing people to the streets with lies that are publishing and making viral here and there are also responsible for what took place in Shiraz yesterday.
Chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masoud Shajara, says a certain process to demonize Iran is taking place, normalizing the use of violence against supporters of the Islamic Republic.
The Iranian nation, who has been target of terrorism from the time of the revolution and target of atrocities, be it committed by Saddam or by others, Iran has been targeted over and over, and We are facing right now a situation that the demonization process which is taking place against Iran, day in, day out, it really is unprecedented. And it does lead to violence being unleashed, not just in Iran, but elsewhere. I mean, we saw in streets of Europe, mosques being attacked, sort of people who are gathering for Arbaeen being attacked, people's hijabs being forcibly removed, and even, you know, five police officers being put in hospital with broken bones. And similar thing has happened in France and elsewhere. So really this encouragement of violence against Iran and in some ways Islamophobic nature of it, it's very worrying, and it goes beyond what is happening to Iranians. It actually has got sort of implication for all Muslims, because if Iranian Muslim so-called opposition, if they go and burn Quran, remove people's hijab, attack mosque with sort of bottles of beer and wine, then, you know, the racist is a license for racists to come out and unleash their Islamophobia.
The terrorist attack on the Iranian shrine is drawing an outburst of international condemnations. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has strongly censored the attack, calling for bringing the perpetrators to justice. Meanwhile, the Russian President Vladimir Putin has expressed sympathies with his Iranian counterpart Ebrahim Raisi. Putin has said that Moscow is ready for increased cooperation with Tehran to fight terrorism. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson has also voiced Beijing's support for Iran's anti-terrorist efforts. Syria, Pakistan, Azerbaijan, Armenia, Oman, and Yemen have also condemned the terrorist act and sent their messages of condolences to the people of Iran. Meanwhile, Iran's ambassador to the UN says Tehran has not supplied any weapons for the use in the war in Ukraine, either before or after the conflict broke out. Addressing a UN Security Council session, Amir Saeed Irvani rejected all accusations by the U.S. and its Western allies that Iran has delivered drones to Russia to be used against Ukraine. Meanwhile, Russian permanent representative to the U.N., Vasily Nebenzia, said the calls by the West for a probe into the use of drones will set a dangerous precedent. He said such calls are in breach of the U.N. Charter. He called on the U.N. Security Council to condemn the West's actions and to defend the Charter. Under the Charter, he said only the U.N. Security Council can mandate an investigation, and it shall not seek or receive instructions from any government or authority. The U.S. and its Western allies have been pushing the U.N. Secretariat to organize a probe into the matter. Lebanon and Israel finalized a U.S. brokered deal aimed at resolving a maritime dispute. Officials from both sides separately submitted their signed copies of the deal to U.S. officials and their new coordinates for the maritime boundary to the U.N. That officially brought the deal into force. Earlier, President Michel Aoun signed a letter endorsing the agreement, but he said that the accord will not change his country's policy towards Israel and that Lebanon will remain in a state of war with the regime. Separately, the Israeli cabinet, led by Prime Minister Yair Lapid, approved the deal. Just ahead of the signing, UN peacekeepers were deployed in the area. The deal is expected to end a dispute mainly over the Karish gas field. Prior to the agreement, Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah had threatened Israel with war if it violated Lebanese rights. Diesel shortages in the U.S. are spreading along the East Coast amid a ban on imports from Russia. There are now fears over a further surge in prices for the fuel as consumers brace for winter. Suppliers have advised customers to give a 72-hour notice for their orders to avoid having to pay above market prices.
The war in Ukraine and a series of interlinked crises across the globe have triggered concerns about energy supplies worldwide. Countries are now beginning to look into contingency plans to avert or overcome possible energy crises. And the United States is no exception. Experts have now sounded the alarm bells over possible blackouts in the Northeast and New England regions. Those areas have already begun rationing heating oil as stockpiles slump by 70%. The rationing measures are imposed on consumers, which limit the amount of heating oil they can purchase. It's reported that the U.S. Northeast is so short on heating oil that the fuel used to power home furnaces is being rationed even before the start of winter. The measures have highlighted the extreme fuel tightness in those regions. Scarcity and high costs have triggered gloomy prospects for the coming months. Wholesale heating oil in New York Harbor averaged $4.09 a gallon, compared with $2.46 at the same time a year ago. The emergency situation has prompted many consumers to opt for partial fills. Some say they will not turn on the heat until they absolutely have to. Apart from that, there are warnings that in case of a severe cold spell and amid global gas market volatility, consumers could face blackouts due to not enough gas for power generation.
Diesel supplies in New England, the region most reliant on distillate fuels for heating, have reportedly dwindled to about a third of normal levels this time of the year. The shortages also puts the United States at risk of further spikes in prices if there's a supply disruption. The rising heating oil prices have now pushed consumers to turn to liquefied natural gas, or LNG. But due to the energy crisis in Europe, LNG prices are already sky high and will likely move higher as winter comes.
The rising heating oil prices have now pushed consumers to turn to liquefied natural gas or LNG. But due to an energy crisis in Europe, LNG prices are already sky high and will likely move higher as winter comes. That means that power generation firms would have to pay astronomical prices to bring natural gas to the US Northeast. There are now predictions that the highest wholesale electricity prices are likely to be in New England. Apart from the US domestic markets, LNG is in high demand across the globe. Europe's demand for liquefied natural gas has soared to unprecedented levels, given the fact that the continent is trying to wean itself off Russia's gas. The US is now the world's largest exporter of natural gas, but political as well as economic elements will prevent Washington from being Europe's rescuer. European nations are scrambling to store enough gas as winter approaches. President Joe Biden promised in March to export more LNG to Europe.
At the time, I noted that we were able to take this step when others could not because the United States is a net exporter of energy with a strong domestic industry. And the United States welcomed the European Union's powerful statement earlier this month, committing to rapidly reduce its dependence on Russian gas. Today, we've agreed on a joint game plan toward that goal, while accelerating our progress toward a secure, clean energy future.
The U.S. commitment to provide the European Union with additional at least 15 billion cubic meters of LNG this year is a big step in this direction, because this will replace the LNG supply we currently receive from Russia.
But the industry in the U.S. is already under pressure. That has prompted some politicians in the U.S. to state that American consumers, economy, as well as national security are at risk unless Washington maintains surplus inventory. Apart from that, much of Europe lacks sufficient import infrastructure, even if America could export more LNG.
Italy's new Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni and her right-leaning government won a confidence vote in the Senate after going through the same procedure in the lower house on Tuesday. Meloni has presented her program, setting out policy for the full five-year legislative term. Max Civelli has more from Rome.
On Wednesday, Italy's new far-right-led government of Giorgia Meloni won a confidence vote in the Senate with 115 votes in favor, 79 against, and 5 abstentions. The new executive can now get down to business. Meloni, aged 45, is the leader and one of the founders of Brothers of Italy, the party that spearheaded a right-wing coalition to victory in Italy last month's election. During Tuesday's first speech in the Chamber of Deputies, Meloni had presented a political program which aims as a priority to counter soaring energy bills and a looming recession. Among the main measures to take away are plans to introduce tax cuts, lift limits on cash transactions, taxing the excess profits of the energy giants in a windfall tax, and reallocating some of the EU pandemic recovery funds. Also on Wednesday, Meloni went on saying that Italy will remain an active member of the EU on her watch and that it would continue to be a reliable partner of NATO in supporting Ukraine. Italy's new prime minister said that the only way to facilitate a peace deal between Russia and Ukraine is helping Kyiv to defend itself militarily. Meloni's two main allies, media magnate Silvio Berlusconi and League leader Matteo Salvini, are longtime admirers of Russian President Vladimir Putin. U.S. Embassy Chargé d'Affaires attended in person the confidence vote on Giorgia Meloni's new government at the Chamber of Deputies on Tuesday. Some fear Meloni could embark on a course of confrontation towards the Western alliance. Back in 2016, Meloni defined the European Union as rotten to its core, while in 2014, Italy's new prime minister staunchly opposed sanctions against Russia after its annexation of Crimea. Max Civili, Rome.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
A very hard winter is finally showing up in Britain. Soaring inflation and high cost of living are the most important issues for British households today. A survey by the Financial Conduct Authority, FCA, laid bare the impact of the cost of living crisis, saying about 1 in 4 of adults in the UK, that is about 24%, were either in financial difficulty or would fall into trouble if they suffered a financial shock. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT wrote, nearly 32 million people, or 60% of UK adults, are finding it a heavy burden or somewhat of a burden to pay their bills, a survey by the Financial Conduct Authority FCA showed recently. According to the research, which was carried out between February and June, the total was up 6 million from 2020, when the economy went into lockdown to fight the coronavirus pandemic. The report said, noting that 4.2 million people have missed bills or loan payments in at least 3 of the 6 months before the survey took place, 1 in 4 UK adults are in financial difficulty or could quickly find themselves in difficulty if they suffered a financial shock. It also found that people living in the most deprived areas of the UK are nearly 7 times as likely to be in financial difficulty compared to those living in the least deprived areas. The watchdog said that 12% of people in Northeast and 10% in the Northwest are in financial difficulty, while 6% of people in Southeast and Southwest are in the same position. According to the report, the FCA has issued a reminder to banks on how to support customers in financial difficulty, encouraging them to contact providers in the first instance to discuss options. The financial regulatory body operating independently of the UK government says that the survey is the largest of its kind, having conducted interviews with more than 19,000 people. Also, Guardian wrote, millions of people in the UK are struggling to pay their bills, according to the City Watchdog, which said a growing proportion of the population is having trouble making ends meet. A survey by the Financial Conduct Authority, FCA, laid bare the impact of the cost of living crisis, saying about 1 in 4 of adults in the UK were either in financial difficulty or would fall into trouble if they suffered a financial shock. The FCA found that about 7.8 million people were finding it a heavy burden to keep up with their bills, an increase of about 2.5 million people since 2020, as wage growth failed to keep pace with soaring inflation at 40-year highs, currently at 10.1%. Meanwhile, 4.2 million people had missed bills or loan payments in the 6 months before the survey took place, in the 4 months between February and June. The financial challenges were concentrated in more deprived areas across the UK, with people in economically challenged regions roughly 7 times more likely to be in financial difficulty than their peers. About 12% of people in the Northeast and 10% in Northwest were struggling financially compared with 6% of people in the Southeast and Southwest. The statistics were gathered as part of the FCA's Financial Live Survey, which polled more than 19,000 people and will be published in full in early 2023. The government is believed to be considering raising benefits in line with wage growth of 5.5% rather than inflation, which would put further pressure on already struggling households. The Resolution Foundation think tank has said it would start consequences for families with a single disabled adult on universal credit likely to lose £380, while a working single parent with one child would lose £478 a year. A working couple with three children would lose £978. Sheldon Mills, a director overseeing consumer and competition issues at the FCA, said, "Our research shows that people up and down the country are struggling to keep up with their bills. If you're facing financial difficulty, you do not need to struggle alone. There is free debt advice available, and we have told firms they must work with their customers to solve any problems with payment."
From our imams, the ninth imam is the first, whose imamate began at a very young age, about 8 or 9.
As-salamu alayka ya Abu Jafar, Muhammad ibn Ali, al-Barakat.
Peace be upon you, O Abu Jafar, Muhammad the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm your host Mahdi, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam was the ninth divinely appointed imam among the household of the Holy Prophet, the Messenger of Allah. Imam al-Jawad was also the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, and His Eminence undertook the imamate and the religious leadership of the Muslims after his father's death, the martyrdom of Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Ridha alayhi salam. As historians have unanimously agreed, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam was not more than 7 years old when he undertook the imamate and the religious leadership of the Muslims. Now, this great role of the imamate and the religious and spiritual and political leadership of the Muslims, of course, would not befit a keeper who had the mentality of a child and who was only a mere 7 years old. Because if one is to plunge into the fields of knowledge and wisdom, or enter into any kind of debate or controversies, especially so with great scholars and specialists, the amount of knowledge and wisdom needed must surpass that of even a very aged person. But we find that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, despite being not more than 7 years old, broke this notion and showed the world that though he was still a child, but because he was a divinely appointed imam on behalf of Allah, he was able to enter the fields of knowledge and wisdom and win in the debates and controversies against great scholars and specialists.
parts of Ziyarat texts of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Peace be upon you, O shining lights. Peace be upon you, O rising full moon. Peace be upon you, O pure one from among the pure ones. Peace be upon you, O immaculate from among the immaculate ones. Peace be upon you, O pleased and pure. Peace be upon you, O Aba Ja'far, Muhammad, the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious, the faithful leader, and Allah's mercy and blessings be upon you.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's great to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So we are humbly talking about the dialogues of the ninth divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam was an imam in whose era many different philosophical and theological debates were occurring in the Muslim world. Different books and texts from the Greek and Roman languages had been translated into Arabic, and the various sciences that came along with these translation of texts posed not a threat to the Islamic tenets, but it did raise many questions for the Muslims. Now, of course, the court judges and the Abbasid establishmental governors, they did not have the appropriate answers to these questions. Again, which is a separate topic, but it does have us wonder and question, why were these court judges in those positions? And why were these people the governors and the rulers and the so-called kings of the Muslims when they did not have the appropriate Islamic knowledge to be able to even defend the theological and philosophical boundaries of pure Muhammadan Islam? And as always, it fell upon the shoulders of the divinely appointed imams, whether it was Imam Ali alayhi salam, or it was Imam Baqir alayhi salam, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, or even Imam Ali al-Ridha alayhi salam, and in our case, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. It was all of the imams all together who defended pure Muhammadan Islam from corruption and from deviation and from misguidance. One of the companions, it seems, of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, by the name of Abu Hashim al-Ja'fari, in this dialogue, asked Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam an interesting question. He said, what is the meaning of one? When we are specifically talking about Allah, of course. And so in response to this question by Abu Hashim al-Ja'fari, we find that Imam Jawad alayhi salam replies and says, the meaning of one, it is Allah whom tongues have agreed on His oneness, as Allah Himself has said in the Holy Quran. And if you ask them, who has created the heavens and the earth, they will certainly and most definitely say, Allah. It is interesting how this statement turns out to be quite true. That if you ask the people who has created the heavens and the earth, and they have a pure conscience, and they have a pure being and a pure soul, and they have not corrupted it with a wave and an ocean of sins and corruption, moral and ethical, they will answer that it is Allah, it is God, it is Creator, it is a supreme being, it is a all-encompassing entity, it is a genius of complete perfection. That is the meaning of the one, because all these different tongues, in all these different languages and from different backgrounds, they all call upon this one supreme being, the supreme being who is known as Allah. Sometimes, dear friends, the proofs of the existence of Allah are even as simple as this statement that was in the Holy Quran, which was recited by Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. All we have to do is to cleanse ourselves and try to believe Allah will help us with the rest. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
From our imams, the ninth imam is the first, whose imamat began at a very young age, about 8 or 9 years old. Basically, look at the special wisdom that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given to our ninth imam. What is zinat? Beauty. But let us go to the hadith of the imam, where imam talks about a zinat in a very different level. وَالْخُشُوعُ زِينَةُ الصَّلَاةِ. When we do the namaz, what is the beauty of namaz? Imam says the beauty of namaz is humility. Humility came earlier, it's coming again. And we can learn from the Shia method of doing the salat. When we go into sajda, we talk about using the turbat. Turbat is made from earth. One of the reasons why we do it in that way is that we are putting the most important part of our face, which is the forehead, on that turbat, which is from the earth. And that is to remind us that this is where we came from. That is where Adam was created from. And this is where we are going to go back. And if we understand the namaz in that way, we will be able to create this khushu and humility in the presence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and also when we deal with one another. And this will become the zenith for our namaz.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
No matter West likes it or not, China-Russia trade saw a significant growth in September. According to reports, the total import and export volume between the two countries reached $18.65 billion. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT wrote, the two nations, Russia and China, have significantly strengthened economic cooperation this year. Official data shows the volume of trade between Russia and China has continued to grow, hitting $136 billion in the first 9 months of this year, the National Bureau of Statistics of China reported recently. According to their data, bilateral economic cooperation surged by 32.5% year-on-year during the period. Chinese exports to Russia were up 10.3% in January-September to $52.24 billion, while imports of Russian goods and services soared by 51.6% to $83.84 billion. The report indicated that crude oil, natural gas, and coal accounted for about 70% in the value of Russian exports to China. Other key items included copper and copper ore, lumber, fuel, and seafood. As for Chinese exports to Russia, a significant share was taken by smartphones, industrial and specialized equipment, toys, foodware, vehicles, air conditioners, and computers. Last month, Russian President Vladimir Putin hailed the strong economic ties between the two countries, pointing out that in 2021, Russia-China trade turnover reached a record-breaking $146 billion. In August, Beijing's ambassador to Moscow expressed hope that bilateral trade could reach $200 billion target this year. He noted that economic cooperation between the two nations shows excellent results and sustainable development despite the challenges associated with the COVID-19 pandemic, the global economic downturn, and difficult international and regional situations. Reuters wrote, China's exports to sanctions hit Russia rose at a double-digit pace for the third consecutive month in September, bucking the trend of weakening external demand elsewhere amid the Russia-Ukraine crisis and a global economic slowdown. Reuters calculations based on Chinese customs data showed shipments of Chinese goods to Russia rose 21.2% from a year earlier in dollar terms, slowing from a 26.5% increase in August, yet outperforming China's overall export growth of 5.7% by a large margin, as interest rate hikes to curb red-hot inflation in major economies weakened demand for Chinese goods. Top exports to Russia included smartphones, generator sets, excavators, and containers. Imports from Russia jumped 55.2% compared with a 59.3% increase in August, partly driven by a 22.1% annual rise in oil imports, the customers' data showed. Oil supplies from Russia totaled 7.46 million tons, equivalent to 1.82 million barrels per day, compared with 1.96 million BPD in August. As Western nations have shunned Russia, cooperation with Beijing has become increasingly important for Moscow. Bilateral trade has surged to $136.9 billion in value in the first 9 months, up 32.5%. According to Global Times, China-Russia trade saw a significant growth in September, with the total import and export volume reaching $18.65 billion, a year-on-year increase of 27.8%, according to data published by the General Administration of Customs, maintaining a strong growth momentum despite external challenges. Experts said the strong trade between the two countries mirrors the fact that there is a growing complementarity under free trade arrangements which benefit both countries, ranging from energy to food, as China and Russia carry out normal economic and trade cooperation on the basis of mutual respect, equality, and mutual benefit. In September alone, China's exports to Russia amounted $7.99 billion, up 17.48% year-on-year, while China's imports came to $10.65 billion, rising by 35.55%. From January to September, China-Russia trade reached $136.8 billion, a year-on-year increase of 32.5%, with both imports and exports sustaining double-digit growth based on China customs data. Energy, bulk commodities, and agricultural food have been the main drive for the growth. The continuous expansion of China-Russia trade once again reflects the strong relationship between the two countries, experts said. For example, China's auto exports to Russia have increased significantly, filling the vacancy left by European and American firms as they quit the Russian market due to the political-driven factors, Song Kuo, president of the Contemporary China-Russia Regional Economy Research Institute, told the Global Times. In 2020, China became the largest export market for Russian agricultural products and meat, and experts predicted that the trend was set to continue. The energy trade has gained a rising foothold in the bilateral trade, as Russia is placing more focus on the East in terms of energy supplies expansion driven by the West sanctions. Gazprom president Alexey Miller said Gazprom has been increasing gas supplies to China via the Power of Siberia gas pipeline, increasing volume by 60% in the first 8 months of 2022, according to media reports. With the implementation of the project, gas supply to China is set to increase every year, reaching a designed annual gas transmission volume of 38 billion cubic meters by 2025. While risks linked to the U.S. dollar exchange rate are mounting, China and Russia have facilitated their own currency settlement, which has greatly assisted in trade and advances the internationalization of the yuan, Song told the Global Times recently. In addition, the improvement of the infrastructure cooperation between China and Russia, including the opening to traffic of the first China-Russia highway bridge, which stretches from Hech, a border city in northeast China's Heilongjiang province, to the Russian city of Blagoveshchensk, spanning the river in June, has boosted the flow of trade. Song said China's economic development and huge market demand requires adequate, stable, and diversified energy supplies, while Russia needs capitals and a reliable market to support economic and trade growth, which is a win-win outcome for the both sides. Song said that Russia-China trade will maintain accelerated growth momentum, which is the result of the natural demand growth of the market economy and free trade.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith which has been transmitted from the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam. This hadith is about anxiety, jaza, which we say in Arabic. This is a very pertinent and relatable subject, especially today when we have so much discussion these days about mental health and stress and depression, anxiety, these kind of things. Right, a lot of people are turning towards, psychologists, psychology, psychiatry, these kind of ulterior methods of the suppression or the alleviation of anxiety and depression and these kind of things. Forgetting that we have many solutions to this problem in religion, and religion has offered many solutions and remedies to these problems, it really behooves us to kind of take a look once again at this subject from the point of view of religion. In the Holy Quran we read the following: indeed, man has been created covetous, anxious when an ill befalls him, and grudging when good comes his way. When something bad happens to him, he becomes anxious, right? He becomes depressed, he becomes sad, he becomes agitated, right? And when good comes his way, he becomes grudging, right? This is in the nature of man, right? But the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, Allah detests two sounds: the sound of wailing at a catastrophe and the sound of a flute in the time of prosperity, right? This actual anxiety or depression or nervousness that we feel and which we express, in the form of, of complaining and these kind of things, right? And whenever something bad happens, this is actually something that Allah doesn't like, right? We should try to, prevent this from occurring. It's not even technically a disease. It's not an ill as, it has been described as being today. Right? They call these kind of things, a disease, right, which should be remedied through counseling or medicine or whatever. Right? But here, according to this hadith, right, this is actually something that Allah abhors. It's a sin. It's reprimanded, right? Right, so it's different from a disease in the technical sense of the term. In a similar fashion, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, beware of anxiety, for it cuts off hope, weakens action, and brings sorrow. But this doesn't mean that religion doesn't provide any solution to anxiety, right? Or that it doesn't have any remedy for it. For example, Imam Ali alayhi salam said, overcome anxiety with patience. For anxiety erases Allah's reward and augments the catastrophe, right? The problem that we are undergoing, which has caused an anxiety attack or whatever, right? It's augmented by